We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Before we get started, I wanted to invite you to our next PaperCamp conference, which will take place March 14th and 15th in Los Angeles. This is our signature program where we tackle product development for wholesale, sales strategies, marketing to retailers, and exhibiting at trade shows. We will spend 2 days diving deep with you and helping you figure out everything you need to know to build a strong wholesale foundation. We're going to provide you with a ton of resources that took us years to uncover and share our favorite manufacturers with you. And we will welcome you with open arms to our Trade Show Bootcamp family. If you'd like to join us, head on over to tradeshowcamp.com/papercamp and register. Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to Proof to Product. This week, I'm chatting with Jenny Morgan. She is the brains behind A Fresh Bunch, which is a licensing agency for independent artists. I have been getting lots of emails, and we've had lots of chatter in both our Trade Show Bootcamp alumni group as well as our Proof to Product Facebook group about licensing lately, and a lot of you have questions, and I thought, who better than Jenny to come on and answer some of these questions? So a little bit of background first. In 2002, Jenny founded Hen & Barley Press, which was a successful wholesale stationery business that focused on personalized stationery goods and imprintables. And as that business grew, Jenny found herself spending most of her time on everything but the design work that she really loved. And plain and simply, she was tired and she was looking for a way to pivot her business so that she was doing more of the design work she craved. So that is when she started A Fresh Bunch, and that was in 2010, and it was a way for designers to come together, collaborate, and create something big. For her vision, she wanted a place where artists could just design their art, and clients would then come purchase the art and focus on producing and selling their products. So on today's episode, Jenny shares how she shifted away from manufacturing and into licensing. She talks about misconceptions that artists have about licensing, and she provides a really great overview of how licensing works, who it is for, and how a licensing agency like A Fresh Bunch can help artists diversify their revenue streams. Hey, Jenny, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you because I've known you for quite some time through the stationery industry. You had a wholesale stationery business for several years before you pivoted into your current business, A Fresh Bunch, which we're going to talk about today. So I would love for you just to start off with a little bit of your background story. Can you tell us about the stationery line you had and what type of products you were offering there?
Sure. So I started my wholesale stationery line, Hen & Barley Press, back in like 2004-ish, back in the day when there was no Etsy, inkjet printing was still kind of, you know, taking off. Digital printing was not even a thing. And really the only way to get product out into the world was to manufacture it yourself. And so I started the line because I had previously been in commercial insurance, believe it or not, working as an underwriter for a large international carrier. And that was not a good creative outlet for me.
you don't say.
No. And I've always been very artistic and very creative, but I didn't pursue the arts in college. So, I slogged it out in insurance for a while. And I will say that having had some work experience, whether that was a creative field or not, I think is immaterial. I just think having worked for a company was helpful because it instilled some basic habits and it instilled really underwriting insurance specifically really requires you to understand a lot of different businesses. And so little did I know that once I transitioned to licensing, that attribute would actually come in handy.
Yeah.
But regardless, I launched Hen & Barley and I was really just doing note cards and a term that many people may not even be familiar with anymore, imprintable.
Yeah.
Right?
I had them too. Yes, I had them too.
We all had them, back before digital on-demand printing was such a thing and so inexpensive. You know, you would go to a retailer and they would have the card stock there and you would have them print up your invitation or your birth announcement or whatever right in the shop. So that's how I started. And I started exhibiting at the stationery show. And that's how I got to know you and a lot of other artists. Yeah. And, you know, gradually, and I think this is not uncommon for people who are running businesses that have product, at a certain point, you're trying to straddle creating the product and then selling and distributing the product. And yeah. I found that I didn't like manufacturing and distribution, like, at all. And it was just sort of, it was really bogging me down. It wasn't allowing a lot of time for design. And more importantly, because you at that time had to do, you know, offset runs really of product, money was always a factor as to whether or not you could add new product or add new designs, yeah, and things like that. So, you know, I worked with sales reps. We were in stores all over the country and all of that. But between my just not loving the manufacturing and distribution, it being really hard to turn a profit, at least in that work environment. Mm-hmm. And then 2008-2009 hit. And I felt like even when I entered the industry, I felt like I had already seen a shift in the industry. You know, trade shows were changing. The scope of the stationery show in particular was changing. Mm-hmm. And by the time 2008-2009 hit, then things really, really changed. And I think at that time, other stationery designers and I were all kind of scratching our heads trying to figure out, well, what do we do now? And we had, some of us had gotten to know one another through trade shows and whatnot and had started to pool our resources in order to buy advertising in trade publications, mm-hmm, and whatnot. That was sort of the genesis of A Fresh Bunch. I came up with the name. I incorporated it. I registered the URL really with the intention of it being a joint marketing vehicle for, mm-hmm, myself and other stationery designers. Then with that, you know, with all of the things I was thinking about personally for my business and then the realities of the economy, I felt like I really needed to think about how to harness the power of that group and how we could maybe be just approaching the industry differently. So yeah, our first thought was, you know, how could we, is there a way we could collectively address the needs of independent retailers? And that led us to exhibiting as a group, kind of under the umbrella of A Fresh Bunch, yeah, at the stationery show. And it was there that what was then Kodak, it's, you know, no longer a thing, but it was, you know, Kodak's equivalent of Shutterfly, Tiny Prints, Minted, or whatever. Mm-hmm. A buyer from Kodak came to our booth and said, you have all these artists. Are you interested in licensing? And yeah, I was like, yeah.
Yes. You're like, I don't know. I don't know. But yes, I'm going to tell you yes.
I'm going to say yes. I'm just going to say yes. And
I'll
so,
figure this out later.
Right. And so that really kind of started us onto the path of licensing. And then, mm-hmm, it also became clear that developing a solution that would, a one-size-fits-all solution for independent retailers was very challenging and beyond scope of what we were able, you know, going to be able to accomplish. And so kind of slowly but surely, our focus just shifted more and more into licensing. And we started with, you know, what we knew best, which was obviously the social expression market, I'll call it. And so we started with, you know, Kodak, Shutterfly, really online photo cards and invitations. And then as we began to understand that market and began to understand the licensing market as a whole, we realized we really wanted to be working on more than just photo cards and that our artists really wanted to be working on more than just photo cards. And I think at that time, it was sort of like a perfect storm of a lot of stationery designers I knew really didn't want to be in manufacturing and production anymore. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to be designing, but not responsible for the product.
Yeah.
And so that just was sort of a natural, it was a natural segue for a lot of artists to then begin working with us.
Absolutely. Okay. I would like to talk about your personal transition.
Yeah.
From so you created this business. It really organically came into its own. Mm-hmm. And now what you're doing is very different than what you were starting at the beginning. And I'd like to talk specifically about A Fresh Bunch and what your, you know, artists are doing in just a minute. But for you personally, what was it like transitioning from manufacturing a product, having, you know, national and international accounts, to shutting that down and moving wholly to licensing art?
Well, you know, it didn't feel like as abrupt a transition as it may sound like, because A Fresh Bunch was kind of this evolving entity. Like, A Fresh Bunch and Hen and Barley Press were running concurrently.
Right.
What A Fresh Bunch started as and what it wound up as, you know, became two different things, but the process felt very gradual. And I think once A Fresh Bunch found its footing as licensing being a fit for the artists, you know, working under the A Fresh Bunch umbrella, then the decision to shut down Hen and Barley Press felt very easy. I think the part that I probably struggled with the most was the time period when I was trying to figure out how to make A Fresh Bunch work within the retail environment that I'd always known for Hen and Barley Press. And that felt a little bit like knocking my head against the wall, and also like I was trying to figure out how to make Hen and Barley work within the changing environment, and then also how to make A Fresh Bunch work for that environment. And once I kind of let go of that, it all became easier. So I'd like to say that if there was a hard part about it, there was the portion of it that felt like shutting something down can feel like a failure.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
I'm sure that lots of your listeners probably have read some of Seth Godin's books, and you know, one of his things is that quitting is a strategy. And in this case, quitting was absolutely a strategy. So I could not have started A Fresh Bunch without having had the experience I had and making the contacts I did with Hen and Barley Press. So over time, I don't view that as a failure. I view that as the necessary progression to get to where I am now.
It's the vehicle, right?
Yeah.
Like, so I, listening to you talk about this, I feel like I had a very similar journey with when I chose to shut down Kelp Designs and focus wholly on Trade Show Bootcamp. And, you know, it was a gradual progression, and they're very similar, a lot of similarities here for how things. And at first I was worried, like, is this going to be viewed as a failure then? Does it, you know, minimize what I'm doing with Bootcamp if I don't have this other business or whatever it is?
Right.
But in reality, all of my experience in the stationery world and even my corporate jobs, to your point earlier, like, that all led me to what I'm doing now, just like your past led you to what you're doing now.
Yeah.
And it made you stronger in that business that you're, you know, A Fresh Bunch now.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I would say that at a certain point, and you maybe felt the same way with Trade Show Bootcamp, you know, when you're providing a service to other people, especially other business owners or independent artists, you know, they need somebody to be the chief, right? They need you to be all in so that they can be all in as well. And, you know, trying to straddle two things, I realized was not going to work. And so I think what I would say to anybody who's, you know, running a business is that if I could do anything over again, it would probably be that I would have embraced the notion of quitting as a strategy much sooner than I did. Just for my own peace of mind and not trying to juggle so many things at one time. And I also feel that in some ways I envy people starting companies nowadays, because there are so many platforms for, you know, you can get websites built so much more easily and less expensively and all of that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I do think that with social media, it is so easy to feel like everybody else is, you know, doing this bang up job. And if you don't feel like your company is going well, then what are you doing incorrectly? And you know, having been through this progression, I can say that it's rare that you're seeing the entire picture. So you have to be true to yourself and just, you know, if it's not feeling right, figure out something else.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that, because I wholeheartedly agree. Let's shift a little bit to licensing specifics now.
Yeah.
What are some misconceptions that people have about licensing art?
I think the most common one is that, well, there are a couple common ones. One is that, you know, companies always want a copyright transfer. And while that happens, and there are companies that request that, it's not really the norm in our experience. And generally speaking, you can negotiate terms that don't involve a copyright transfer. So there's that. I think the other thing is that there's the misconception that you can go in and negotiate like this advance and all these royalties and all of that. And the reality is that unless you have somehow made a name/brand for yourself, like AKA your Jonathan Adler, the chances of that happening out of the gate are pretty slim. So you, like any other business, like any other job for that matter, you have to do your time. There really are not like overnight sensations in licensing, nor is it a get rich quick scheme. Mm-hmm. It's not sexy, but it's really about consistency and kind of discipline as much as anything else.
Yeah. No, that makes a whole lot of sense. And also, it seems to me, you know, I've done licensing in the past to a much lesser degree than your artists do now. In fact, I worked with you guys for a short time. But it did strike me as the more you did it, the more successful you became, because you created a name for yourself. You know, you knew how to more efficiently handle the call outs for projects and all sorts of things. You know, you could build a system around it. You mentioned some of the compensation structures. Do you mind briefly just talking about what different compensation structures look like in licensing deals?
Sure. So I don't want to say there's a range. I would say there's a menu of options, and which option really depends on the client. So that's the other thing, is clients who are royalty only are typically royalty only, and they're royalty only for a reason, cash flow, size, whatever. You're typically not going to negotiate a fee, whether that's an advance against royalties or whatever. You're not going to negotiate a fee with somebody who tends to be royalty only. And then there are clients who are flat fee only, and that can be flat fee by category, meaning this design is exclusive to us for greeting cards, but you could go out and license it for another flat fee for gift bags, let's say. Mm-hmm. And then there are clients who it's a fee and it's a complete buyout with or without copyright transfer. So that can mean we are licensed, we have rights to this for every product we manufacture for a specific period of time for a specific fee. And then kind of the end of the continuum and the least desirable for most artists is you are transferring all rights on that piece for a fee to a client.
All exclusive, all like every rights for forever.
Yeah.
What about some of, aren't there also some people that will do exclusive for a certain amount of product, like a certain product run? Is that still relevant today, or is that?
Not that we have seen, no.
Okay.
Nope.
So it wouldn't be like you can use this for 10,000, you know, tote bags and then.
No, typically it's a finite period, because that period they usually are 2 to 3 years, and that typically covers the selling season for a given manufacturer. And, you know, what that takes into account is the process of it's been presented to an end retailer. The end retailer has signed on to it. They've issued a PO for it. And then that product has to get manufactured and delivered and distributed. And that happens usually like, you know, it starts a year before the selling season, if not longer. Like we've been working since July on Christmas 2019. So that that product will be finalized. The design decisions will be finalized in the first quarter of the year, and then they, you know, officially go into production. So, you know, the time period, the contract has to cover that time period, and then a sell-off period, you know, after right. the selling season's over, sales and things like that.
Okay, so you just kind of walked us through the product development timeline.
Yeah.
But there's a whole season before that where you're actually like pitching ideas and, you know, being accepted or turned down or whatever it might be.
Yeah. So
could you walk us through the larger time frame of like, you know, when you do you receive a call out from these clients of what they're looking for? Like, what's the process to even pitch them?
Right. Well, that's the tricky part because everybody seems to be working on a slightly different calendar, right? And truly, what we have found is that now that we're working with certain clients regularly, we will get call outs from them saying we're looking for X for, you know, X product, like X theme for X product, right? And okay. then we kind of present to them what we have. You know, the trickier part, I think, especially when you're new, and especially if you're trying to do it both as, you know, you're the artist and you're the salesperson, is figuring right. out each company's sales cycle. Because if you present somebody with, you know, a baby image at a time of year when they're not buying babies, it can be a great baby image, but, you know, it, maybe they'll file it away. Maybe they'll come back to you. Maybe not.
Right.
But, you know, I think what we've found is that, you know, a lot of companies have kind of their stable of artists or agencies that they work with. And as companies, small and large, shift and change and react to the realities in their market with their end retailers, you know, they're trying to be efficient with their time as well, which can often mean that they just don't have the time to work with hundreds of, you know, or even dozens of artists.
Mm-hmm.
But to your point, yes, in theory, you would be pitching to somebody at a time when they are looking for that art. When you're kind of new to the industry, it's hard to know when that is. We try to keep calendars by client, and it's different for every client.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
But I think too, to your, to one of your benefits or one of the benefits for your artists working with you is that you have these relationships with these clients who come to you for, you know, they know you have talented artists that can fill their needs.
Right.
And so, you know, you're not just cold pitching these clients. I'm sure there are times where you're cold pitching different new clients,
right.
but you know, you've built relationships, which is huge. Hey friends, I know you wear a lot of hats as a small business owner, and while some of those hats are pretty great, others like filing your taxes and running payroll, those aren't so great. And that is where Gusto comes in. Gusto makes payroll, taxes, and HR actually easy for all of us small business owners. They have fast, simple payroll processing, benefits, and expert HR support all in one place. Gusto automatically pays and files your federal, state, and local taxes so you don't have to worry about it. Plus, they make it easy to add on health benefits or even 401ks for your team. Those old school clunky payroll providers just weren't built for the way we're doing small business work today. But Gusto is. And now is the best time to get set up for the new year. Listeners of Proof to Product get 3 free months when they run their first payroll. Try a demo and see for yourself at gusto.com/proof. That's gusto.com/proof. What types of artists are you working with?
Well, you know, we always try to have a range in terms of look, in terms of style, in terms of medium. For us, just sort of baseline, and this isn't necessarily true of every agency, but this is the case for us based on how we tend to work with our clients. If you start with painting as your medium, we still need you to be able to get it into some kind of digital format that can be manipulated by the client on their end. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of one of those client business realities that it is what it is. So it's not that we won't take somebody who only works in watercolor, but you know, if you can't manipulate in Photoshop or Illustrator, then we can't really easily work together. So I would say that what we're always looking for is a unique style, a unique voice, a consistent style. You know, we work with a range of clients, and we need to know what each of our artists is capable of stylistically so that we can pair an artist to a client commission appropriately. And also, if an artist or if a client comes to us with kind of a larger ask, we still want to curate what we show them so that it meets their end needs. So it's important mm-hmm. for us to understand our artist's style. So when we get portfolios that are kind of all over the map, we need kind of a consistent voice and style. And
what kind of, I don't mean to interrupt you, but what kind of portfolios have you seen that are really strong, and how can people structure that in a way that's putting their best foot forward?
Well, I would say that even if it's just like a Wix website or a Behance portfolio or whatever, just a website with a portfolio of art that, again, looks consistent and shows a unique but consistent point of view, those mm-hmm. tend to resonate the most with us. We get a lot of artist applications. So we have an application that we ask artists to fill out on our website.
That's what I was going to ask. Is it rolling applications?
Yeah, we accept applications all the time, but we try to bring on artists either like right after the May show, the mm-hmm. May licensing shows in New York, or at the very end of the calendar year so that we're starting the next calendar year with a new artist. Just because of the timing of work, we don't want somebody to come in at a dead point. It's harder for them to ramp up and kind of get into a groove with submitting art.
Makes sense.
But we ask artists to fill out this application. We find that lately we've been getting a lot of links to like people's Instagram profiles and, you know, their Etsy shop or their Spoonflower collection. That's just not enough for us to evaluate somebody's style. Some people are really good at keeping their Instagram profile to just their artwork. Most people mm-hmm. have some, you know, dog shots or cat shots or, you know, kid shots or whatever in the mix. It's just difficult to glean from that what somebody's artistic point of view is.
So right. I know that makes a lot of
if
sense.
If you're serious about it, get a website. You know, put up a website, even if it's just a page.
Okay. Very nice. So we started to talk about the types of projects that your artists are working on. Do you mind sharing kind of what types of things their art is being purchased for and different mediums maybe?
So we still do a lot of photocard work. That has changed a little bit in that we have a couple of artists. Well, we have like a handful of artists who really work on our photocard work because, as you know, having done it, photocards are kind of their own animal, and they are deceptively difficult to design well. That's not to say that those artists don't also work on other projects for us, but, you know, we have some artists who really focus on photocards. So that's still a big chunk of our business. And then on top of that, we do a lot of work for gift bags, gift wrap, greeting cards, less so for textiles, but we're doing more in that realm, and that's certainly one of our goals. Wall art, home accessories, things like that. You know, so the ideal scenario for us and for our artists is that we place something for one category, and then we place it for another category and another category. And, you know, with the right art and with strong art, that is in fact possible.
That's cool. What kind of, are you doing a lot of educating for your artists in terms of when you're bringing them on? Do most of them have licensing experience, or are you kind of helping them onboard to that whole process and what's needed? And
we do a lot of education. So we actually have worked really hard at creating this repository of information for our artists. We call it our toolkit. And, you know, we try to provide like checklists and best practices, you know, things that we know from experience have made artists successful, just kind of like core competencies, if you will, beyond artistic talent, which is a given. We try to vet YouTube videos or Skillshare classes. If we see something that we think is useful or helpful, we will, you know, put a link to it in this toolkit so that our artists then, they're not doing the work of trolling the internet, trying to find something to help them improve at hand lettering, say. We're kind of suggesting that to them. So, you know, I think our basic business premise, if you will, is that our role is to free our artists up to do what they do best, which is to create work. And if we're doing our job correctly, then we're giving them both the time to do that and the information that they need about the marketplace in order to create work mindfully. That's the other thing that I would say is that, you know, there are a lot of like 100-day challenges out there and things like in contests, design contests and things like that. And I totally am not disparaging those things. A lot of our artists do participate in those things. In general, however, I would say that work created in those environments tends not to be less marketable for whatever reason. So we find that our strongest work actually comes from either specific client asks or briefs that we create in-house. So that's the other thing that we do a little differently is that we actually create anywhere from 3 to 4 briefs per month that we launch to our artists, and we ask them to submit work to that as a means of generating portfolio-ready work for the shows we attend.
Okay. How does it work for your artists in terms of compensation? Do they pay a monthly fee, or do they pay you based upon work that is secured, like a commission base, or how does that work?
So the way it works is that we earn a percentage of every royalty dollar or fee dollar. So we collect all the royalties on behalf of our artists so that the clients aren't having to generate checks to each and every artist. They send us one check, and then we collate all of that, and we distribute quarterly reports and payments to our artists.
Very nice.
Yeah. So that's, you know, that's pretty standard in the industry in terms of an agent taking a cut. You know, some agents will charge for attendance at trade shows or for the materials required, like the portfolio books or whatever. We do not. We bear that expense as that we consider that cost of doing business.
Right, right. I was just going to say it's part of you getting your name out too and meeting with the new clients.
Exactly.
Are there any projects that your artists have worked on that you're just super proud of and, you know, kind of, I'm sure every project, but is there anything that stands out as, you know, just something you're really excited about or?
Well, you know, there, I think the projects that we are most proud of as a team, and I should mention that A Fresh Lunch is not just me. I actually work with 3 fabulous women. I have a project manager / assistant art director who used to work for Recycled Paper Goods, now owned by American Greetings. And then we have a full-time sales director whose background is in software sales. And so she has the sales gene that many artists and myself are, you know, missing. So, you know, that is a huge help to us. And then we have, you know, like another assistant project manager who kind of helps onboard artists and all of that. But in terms of projects, I think as a team, what we're most proud of and what we like to work on the most, which again, maybe makes us different from many agencies, is we really like to perform as an outsourced art department for clients. So when we first started our relationship with CBS Photo, we really soup to nuts built a collection from photo cards to photo gifts to everything, starting from here are the trends, both in terms of style and in terms of what's trending for photo cards, photo gifts, et cetera, and really helped them build out and launch a new collection. And similarly, we have done that for clients with their presentations for major retailers like Target and Walmart. And I am super proud of our artists' ability to, from all these points around the world, collaborate online with each other to create this diverse collection of looks that, you know, is still cohesive And it's all these different artists coming from all these different locations, but it creates this cohesive collection that our clients need for their presentations to their clients.
Right, right. Oh, that is a difficult task to take people with such different styles and weave it together in a way that makes sense and is still cohesive.
It's so fun. It's so fun to watch it all come together. And I wish I could share the visuals with you, but I can't. But it's really cool.
I understand.
It's really cool.
Awesome. Well, what's next for you and A Fresh Bunch? What are you guys working on right now, or what's upcoming in the next few months?
Well, we just got back from San Francisco. Blueprint, which is a newer licensing show, just, you know, had this new first time show on the West Coast, and that was really successful. We're going to be doing it again next year. So coming back from that, we're now turning our attention toward the Blueprint show in May, which means both preparing our portfolios for that. And part of that, and this is kind of my business background and my, you know, my team's business background, is that we really look at and analyze what got looks, what got requested, what themes were we hearing about over and over again, you know, and we try to apply that then to the briefs that we put in front of our artists to help direct their artistic efforts, if you will. So we're really in preparation mode for that, as well as, you know, just being at the ready for client asks that we know are coming down the pike. I will say that we, you know, this is the quarter where we really evaluate current artist contracts and prospective artist applications. And if we decide to bring somebody new on, typically it's this time of year, so that they have time to work with us on preparing for the May show.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. Cool. Well, where can people find out more information about A Fresh Bunch online, or if you have social media handles where they can follow you too? Why don't you share that?
We're A Fresh Bunch everywhere, but afreshbunch.com is our website, and that you know, shows our current stable of artists, as well as has a tab for artists looking for representation if that's something that an artist is interested in. And I do want to say that I know, you know, many of the companies that you've worked with are just that. They're companies, they have like an ongoing concern, whether it's a card company or whatever it is. And we do have artists who have other jobs, you know, other things that we do. That said, as with anything, at a certain point, it often comes down to making the difficult choice of what am I going to be when I grow up? Am I going to be, you know, a licensed artist, or am I going to run a company?
Yeah.
So I don't want to discourage somebody who is manufacturing product from exploring licensing, but it does require time and consistency.
That's an important to note. I'm finding too many people in our community are being approached by companies that would like to license their art, whether it's at a show or just through social media. And, you know, they don't know what questions to ask.
Right.
They don't know how to approach it. They don't know what to charge. And so I really appreciate you coming on the show to talk about the process, talk about how it works, and also how you run things at A Fresh Bunch. So people are looking for another resource for that type of work. They, you know, they can reach out to you. So
absolutely.
Thank you for your time today, Jenny. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for asking me. I'm honored to be here.
Hey, friends. When it comes to our Trade Show Bootcamp alumni, I am like a proud mama bear that wants to shout their successes from the rooftops. Everyone is working so hard and building strong, unique businesses, and it is inspiring to see, and I'm 100% honored that they allow us to play a small part in their growth and success. So today I wanted to share a success story from one of our alumni that attended Paper Camp, our Paper Camp conference. When Alex from Chez Garnier came to Paper Camp, she had been in business for about 20 months. She did not have an office studio, she was working out of her living room, and she had a collection of about 80 letterpress greeting cards, which was pretty good. Some people come with fewer designs, but she had 80 letterpress greeting cards ready to roll. Alex knew that wholesale was her end game. She knew that's where she wanted to put her time, her focus, and her energy. So she came and she soaked up a ton of information at Paper Camp, and then she went home and put what she learned into action. Alex sourced new products, she reached out to new buyers, and she streamlined her internal processes for her business. Alex now works with a large number of sales reps. She has a small but mighty team working out of a new warehouse space that she's actually in the process of outgrowing right now. She's grown her product line substantially to include new product categories, and she's also increased the volume at which she is producing these products. This year alone, Alex exhibited at a number of trade shows. She's done dozens of trade shows since coming to Paper Camp. And within a year of her coming to Paper Camp, her hustle and hard work landed her products in more than 500 retail stores. It's been incredible to see her growth and her hard work play out, and I'm honored that she allowed myself and Paper Camp to be a small part in that success. If you are looking to grow your wholesale line, if you want to create a smart, strong foundation for your business, I invite you to join us at Paper Camp March 14th and 15th in Los Angeles. We are going to keep this small and intimate so that you can ask any and all questions that you have so that you can fast forward your business. Again, you can get information at tradeshowcamp.com/papercamp, and we look forward to working with you. Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them up-level, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.